There was a brief moment of silence as the man looked at Lydia's form, and she focused on the splotch of mud on his boot.
"Well," he said, "don't feel bad. Lots of people fail the first time."
He turned the paper face up, and again she saw the five dark circles, like moles, the rest of the sheet blank and bare. Lydia did not wait for her score. As the machine sucked in the answer sheet, she walked straight past him, back into the waiting room. There was a long line at the counter for photos now. The man with the mustache counted the bills in his wallet. The girl who had skipped picked at her nail polish. The pigtailed girl and the boy had already gone. On the bench, James sat waiting.
"So?" he said, looking down at her empty hands. "Where is it?"
"I failed," she said. The two women beside her father on the bench looked up at her, then quickly away. Her father blinked, once, twice, as if he hadn't heard her properly.
"It's okay, honey," he said. "You could try again this weekend."
In the cloud of disappointment and humiliation, Lydia did not remember or care that she could take the test again. In the morning, Nath would leave for Boston. All she could think was, "I will be here forever. I will never be able to get away." James put his arm around his daughter, but it weighed on her shoulders like a lead blanket, and she shrugged it off. "Can we go home now?" she said. "As soon as Lydia comes in," Marilyn said, "we'll say surprise, and then we'll have dinner and presents after." Nath was up in his room, packing for his trip. And alone with her youngest, she was planning aloud, half talking to herself. Hannah, delighted to have her mother's attention even by default, nodded sagely. Under her breath, she practiced. "Surprise! Surprise!" and watched her mother pipe Lydia's name in blue onto the sheet cake. It was supposed to look like a driver's license, a white frosted rectangle with a photo of Lydia in the corner where the real photograph would be. Inside, it was chocolate cake. Because this was an extra special birthday, Marilyn had baked this cake herself. From a box, true, but she had mixed it. One hand moving the mixer through the cake batter, the other holding the battered aluminum bowl still against the whirling blades. She had let Hannah pick out the tub of frosting, and now she squeezed out the last of the tube of decorator's icing, spelling L-Y-D, and reached into the grocery bag for another. Such a special cake, Hannah thought, would taste extra special too. Better than just plain vanilla or chocolate. The box had shown a smiling woman hovering over a slice of cake, and the words, "You mix in the love." Love, Hannah decided, would be sweet, like her mother's perfume, and soft as marshmallows. Quietly, she extended a finger, gouging a small dip in the perfectly smooth surface of the cake.
"Hannah!"
Marilyn snapped and swatted her hand away. While her mother smoothed the dent with the spatula, Hannah touched the frosting on her finger to her tongue. It was so sweet her eyes watered. And when Marilyn wasn't looking, she wiped the rest of it onto the back side of the tablecloth. She could tell by the little line between her mother's eyebrows that she was still upset, and she wanted to lean her head against Marilyn's aproned thigh. Then her mother would understand that she hadn't meant to mess up the cake. But as she reached out, Marilyn set down the tube of icing mid-letter and lifted her head, listening.
"That can't be them already."
Beneath her feet, Hannah felt the floor shiver as the garage door groaned open.
"I'll get Nath."
By the time Hannah and Nath arrived downstairs, though,
Lydia and their father had already come from the garage into the hallway, and the moment for surprise had passed. Instead, Marilyn took Lydia's face between her hands and kissed her on the cheek, hard, leaving a red smudge of lipstick, like a welt.
"You're home early," she said. "Happy birthday, and congratulations."
She held out a palm.
"So, let's see it."
"I failed," Lydia said. She glared from Nath to their mother, as if daring them to be upset. Marilyn stared.
"What do you mean you failed?"
she said, honest surprise in her voice, as if she had never heard the word. Lydia said it again, louder.
"I failed."
It was almost, Hannah thought, as if she were mad at their mother. Mad at all of them. It could not be just the test. Her face was stony and still, but Hannah saw the tiny trembles in her hunched shoulders, in her jaw clenched tight, as if she might shiver to pieces. She wanted to wrap her arms tight around her sister's body, to hold her together, but she knew Lydia would only push her away. No one else noticed. Nath and Marilyn and James glanced at each other, unsure what to say.
"Well," Marilyn said at last, "you'll just study the traffic rules and try again when you're ready. It's not the end of the world."
She tucked a stray lock of hair behind Lydia's ear.
"It's okay. It's not like you failed a school subject, right?"
On any other day, this would have made Lydia boil over inside. Today, after the necklace, after the boys in front of the car, after the test, after Louisa, there was no room left in her for anger. Something within her tipped and cracked.
"Sure, Mom," she said.
She looked up at her mother, around at her whole family, and smiled. And Hannah nearly ducked behind Nath. The smile was too wide, too bright, cheery and white-toothed and fake. On her sister's face, it was terrifying. It made Lydia look like a different person, a stranger. Again, no one else noticed. Nath's shoulders unhunched. James let out his breath. Marilyn wiped her hands, which had grown damp, on her apron.
"Dinner's not quite ready yet," she said. "Why don't you go up and take a shower and relax? We'll eat early, as soon as it's done."
"Great," Lydia said. And this time Hannah actually did turn her face away until she heard her sister's footsteps on the stairs.
"What happened?"
Marilyn murmured to James, who shook his head. Hannah knew. Lydia hadn't studied. 2 weeks ago, before Lydia had come home after school, Hannah had explored her room, looking for treasures. She'd pocketed Lydia's book from the floor of the closet, and beneath it had found the rules and regulations pamphlet. When Lydia started to study, Hannah had thought, she would notice her book was missing. She would come looking for it. Every few days she had checked, but the pamphlet hadn't moved. Yesterday it had been half covered by a pair of beige platforms and Lydia's best bell bottoms, and the book was still tucked upstairs under Hannah's pillow. Upstairs in her room, Lydia yanked at the necklace, which wouldn't break. She unhooked it and slammed it inside its box, as if it were a wild thing, and pushed it deep beneath the bed. If her father asked where it was, she would say she was saving it for special occasions. She would say she didn't want to lose it. "Don't worry, she'd wear it next time, Daddy." In the mirror, a fine red line ringed her neck. By the time Lydia came down to dinner an hour later, the mark had faded away, though the feeling that accompanied it had not. She had dressed up as if for a party, Her hair ironed dry and straight and glossy on the big ironing board, her lips coated with jam-colored gloss. James, looking at her, had a sudden memory of Marilyn when they'd first met.
"Don't you look nice," he said,
and Lydia forced herself to smile. She sat bolt upright with that same fake smile at the dinner table, like a doll on display, but only Hannah spotted its fakeness. Her back ached, watching Lydia. Every bit of her did. And she slouched in her own chair until she nearly slid off the seat. As soon as dinner was over, Lydia patted her mouth with her napkin and stood up.
"Wait," Marilyn said. "There's cake."
She went into the kitchen and in a moment emerged bearing the cake on a tray, candles aglow. The photo of Lydia was gone, the top of the cake refrosted to plain white, with just Lydia's name. Hiding under the smooth white, Hannah thought, was the pretend driver's license, the congratulations, and the blue LYD. Though you couldn't see it, it was there just underneath, covered up, but smudged and unreadable and horrible. And you'd be able to taste it, too. Their father snapped picture after picture. But Hannah didn't smile. Unlike Lydia, she had not yet learned to pretend. Instead, she half shut her eyes, like she did during the scary parts of TV shows, so that she could only half see what came next. Which was this. Lydia waited for them to finish singing. As they reached the last line of the song, James held up the camera and she bent over the cake, lips pursed as if to kiss. Her perfectly made-up face smiled around the table, sweeping each of them in turn. Their mother, their father, Nath. Hannah did not know everything Lydia thought she understood. The necklace, Louisa, All I Want You to Remember. But she knew that something had shifted inside her sister. That she was balanced on a dangerous, high-up ledge. She sat very still, as if one wrong move might tip Lydia off the edge. And Lydia blew out the flames with one quick puff. 10. Lydia had been wrong about Louisa, of course. Back then, on his daughter's birthday, James would have laughed at the very idea, the thought of anyone other than Marilyn in his bed, in his life, was preposterous. But back then, the thought of life without Lydia had been preposterous too. Now, both of those preposterous things have come true. When Louisa shuts the apartment door and returns to the bedroom, James is already buttoning his shirt.
"You're going?"
she says. Inside, she still clings to the possibility that Marilyn's visit was just a coincidence. But she is fooling herself, and she knows it. James tucks in his shirt and fastens his belt.
"I have to,"
he says. And they both know this is true, too.
"It may as well be now."
He's not sure what to expect when he reaches home. Sobbing, rage, a frying pan to the head. He doesn't know yet either what he will say to Marilyn.
"I'll see you later," he says to Louisa, who kisses his cheek. And this is the one thing he's sure of.
When he enters the house just after noon, there is no sobbing, no rage. Just silence. Nath and Hannah sit side by side on the living room couch, eyeing him warily as he passes through. It is as if they are watching a doomed man march to the gallows, and this is how James himself feels as he climbs the stairs to his daughter's room, where Marilyn sits at Lydia's desk, eerily calm. For a long while, she says nothing, and he wills himself still, keeps his hands steady, until she finally speaks.
"How long?"
Outside, Nath and Hannah crouch on the top step in wordless accord, holding their breath, listening to the voices that carry down the hall.
Since the funeral.
The funeral.
Marilyn, still studying the carpet, presses her lips into a thin line.
She's very young. How old is she?
22, 23.
Marilyn, stop it.
Marilyn doesn't stop it.
She seems sweet, quite docile. That's a nice change, I suppose. I don't know why I'm surprised. I guess you're long overdue for a trade-in. She'd make a very nice little wife.
James, to his surprise, blushes.
No one's talking about...
Not yet.
But I know what she wants. Marriage? Husband? I know her type.
Marilyn pauses, remembering her younger self, her mother's proud whisper,
a lot of wonderful Harvard men.
My mother spent her whole life trying to turn me into that type. At the mention of Marilyn's mother, James stiffens, as if he has turned to ice.
Oh, yes. Your poor mother. And then you went and married me.
He chokes out a laugh.
What a disappointment.
I am disappointed.
Marilyn's head snaps up.
I thought you were different.
What she means is, I thought you were better than other men. I thought you wanted better than that. But James, still thinking of Marilyn's mother, hears something else.
You got tired of different, didn't you? He says. I'm too different. Your mother knew it right away. You think it's such a good thing standing out. But look at you. Just look at you.
He takes in Marilyn's honey-colored hair. Her skin, even paler than usual from a month spent indoors. Those sky-colored eyes he has adored for so long, first in his wife's face and then in his child's. Things he has never said, never even hinted to Marilyn before, pour from his mouth.
You've never been in a room where no one else looked like you. You've never had people mock you to your face. You've never been treated like a stranger.
He feels as if he has vomited, violently, and he drags the back of his hand across his lips.
You have no idea what it's like, being different.
For a moment, James looks young and lonely and vulnerable, like the shy boy she'd met so long ago, and half of Marilyn wants to gather him in her arms. The other half of her wants to batter him with her fists.
She gnaws her lip, letting the two sides struggle.
Sophomore year, in the lab, the men used to sneak up behind me and try to lift up my skirt.
She says at last.
One time they came in early and pissed in all of my beakers. When I complained, the professor put his arm around me and said...
The memory catches in her throat, like a burr.
Don't worry about it, honey. Life's too short and you're too beautiful. You know what? I didn't care. I knew what I wanted. I was going to be a doctor.
She glares at James, as if he has contradicted her.
Then, fortunately, I came to my senses. I stopped trying to be different. I did just what all the other girls were doing. I got married. I gave all that up.
A thick bitterness coats her tongue.
Do what everyone else is doing. That's all you ever said to Lydia. Make friends. Fit in. But I didn't want her to be just like everyone else.
The rims of her eyes ignite.
I wanted her to be exceptional.
On the stairs, Hannah holds her breath. She is afraid to move anything, even a fingertip.
Maybe if she stays perfectly still, her parents will stop talking.
She can hold the world motionless, and everything will be all right.
Well, now you can marry this one, Marilyn says. She seems like the serious type. You know what that means.
She holds up her left hand, where the wedding ring glints dully.
A girl like that wants the whole package. Matchbox house, picket fence, 2.3 kids.
She lets out one hard, sharp, terrifying bark of a laugh, and out on the landing, Hannah hides her face against Nath's arm.
I suppose she'll be more than happy to trade student life for all that.
I just hope she doesn't regret it.
At this word, regret, something in James flares. A hot, biting smell like overheating wires pricks his nostrils.
Like you do.
A sudden and stunned silence. Though Hannah's face is still pressed into Nath's shoulder, she can picture her mother exactly. Her face frozen, the rims of her eyes a deep red. If she cries, Hannah thinks, it won't be tears. It will be little drops of blood.
Get out,
Marilyn says at last.
Get out of this house.
James touches his pocket for his keys, then realizes they are still in his hand. He had not even put them down. As if he had known inside all along that he would not be staying.
Let's pretend, he says, that you never met me, that she was never born, that none of this ever happened.
Then he is gone.
Out on the landing, there is no time to run. Hannah and Nath have not even stood up when their father emerges into the hallway. At the sight of his children, James stops short. It is clear they've heard everything. For the past 2 months, every time he sees one of them, he sees a fragment of their missing sister. In the tilt of Nath's head, in the long sweep of hair half-screening Hannah's face. And he leaves the room abruptly without truly understanding why. Now, with both of them watching, he edges past, not daring to meet their eyes. Hannah presses herself to the wall, letting their father pass. But Nath stares straight at him, silently, with a look James can't quite parse. The sound of his car as it winds out of the driveway, then speeds away, has the ring of finality. All of them hear it. Silence settles over the house like ash. Then Nath leaps to his feet.
Stop,
Hannah wants to say, but she knows Nath won't. Nath pushes Hannah aside. His mother's keys dangle from their hook in the kitchen, and he takes them and heads for the garage.
Wait!
Hannah calls, out loud this time. She is not sure whether he is chasing their father or if he is running away as well, but she knows that what he has planned is dreadful.
Nath! Wait! Don't!
He doesn't wait. He backs out of the garage, nicking the lilac bush beside the door, and then he, too, is gone. Upstairs, Marilyn hears none of this. She shuts the door of Lydia's room, and a thick, heavy quiet wraps itself around her like a smothering blanket. With one finger, she strokes Lydia's books, the neat binders in a row, each labeled in marker with the class and date. A coarse fur of dust now coats everything. The row of blank diaries, the old science fair ribbons, the pinned-up postcard of Einstein, the covers of each binder, the spines of each book. She imagines emptying Lydia's room piece by piece. The tiny holes and unfaded patches that will mar the wallpaper when the posters and pictures come down. The carpet, crushed beneath the furniture that will never rise again. Like her own mother's house after everything had been cleared away. She thinks of her mother coming home alone all those years to an empty house. The bedroom kept just as it was, with fresh bed sheets, for the daughter who would never return, her husband long since gone, in some other woman's bed now. You loved so hard and hoped so much, and then you ended up with nothing. Children who no longer needed you, a husband who no longer wanted you. Nothing left but you, alone and empty space. With one hand, she pulls Einstein from the wall and tears him in two. Then the periodic table, useless now. She yanks the earpieces from Lydia's stethoscope. She ravels the prize ribbons to satin shreds. One by one, she topples the books from the shelf, the color atlas of human anatomy, women pioneers of science. With each one, Marilyn's breath becomes more fierce. How your body works. Chemistry experiments for children. The story of medicine. She remembers every single one. It is like rewinding time, working her way backward through Lydia's entire life. An avalanche piles up at her feet. Downstairs, huddled beneath the hall table, Anna hears heavy thumps, like stone after stone thudding to the floor. At last, perched in the far corner of the bookcase, the very first book Marilyn had ever bought for Lydia. Slender as a pamphlet, it teeters alone on the shelf, then tips. Air hovers all around you, the splayed pages read. Though you can't see it, it is still there. Marilyn wants to burn the books that litter the carpet, to peel the wallpaper from the walls, everything that reminds her of Lydia and all she could have been. She wants to stomp the very bookshelf to splinters. Stripped bare, it lists unsteadily, as if it is tired, and with one push, she knocks it to the floor. And there, in the hollow below the bottom shelf, a book. Thick, red, a scotch-taped spine. Even before Marilyn sees the photo, she knows what it is. But she turns it over anyway, with suddenly unsteady hands, still astonished to find Betty Crocker's face implausibly, impossibly staring up at her. "Your cookbook," Lydia had said. "I lost it." Marilyn had been thrilled, had considered it an omen. Her daughter had read her mind. Her daughter would never be confined to a kitchen. Her daughter wanted more. It had been a lie. She flips the pages she has not seen in years, tracing her mother's pencil marks with her fingertip, smoothing the pockmarked pages where she had cried all those nights, in the kitchen, alone. Somehow, Lydia had known that this book had pulled on her mother like a heavy, heavy stone. She hadn't destroyed it. She had hidden it all those years. She had piled book after book atop it, weighing it down so her mother would never have to see it again. Lydia, 5 years old, standing on tiptoe to watch vinegar and baking soda foam in the sink. Lydia tugging a heavy book from the shelf, saying, "Show me again. Show me another." Lydia touching the stethoscope ever so gently to her mother's heart. Tears blur Marilyn's sight. It had not been science that Lydia had loved. And then, as if the tears are telescopes, she begins to see more clearly. The shredded posters and pictures, the rubble of books, the shelf prostrate at her feet. Everything that she had wanted for Lydia, which Lydia had never wanted but had embraced anyway. A dull chill creeps over her. Perhaps, and this thought chokes her, that had dragged Lydia underwater at last. The door creaks open. And Marilyn slowly raises her head, as if Lydia might somehow impossibly appear. For a second, the impossible happens. A small, blurred ghost of little girl Lydia, dark-haired, big-eyed, hesitating in the doorway, clinging to the jamb. "Please," Marilyn thinks. In this word is all she cannot phrase, even to herself. "Please come back. Please let me start over. Please stay. Please." Then she blinks, and the figure sharpens. Hannah, pale and trembling, her face glossy with tears.
"Mom?"
she whispers. Without thinking, Marilyn opens her arms, and Hannah stumbles into them. Across town, at the liquor store, Nath sets a fifth of whiskey on the counter. He has tasted alcohol exactly once in his life. At Harvard, his host student had offered him a beer. He'd gulped down four, more excited by the idea of it than the flavor. It had tasted to him like fizzy urine. And for the rest of the evening, the room had wobbled slightly on its axis. Now he wants the world to spin loose and careen away. The man behind the counter studies Nath's face, then squints at the bottle of whiskey. Nath's fingers twitch. At 18, he is allowed to buy only 3-2 beer, that watery stuff his classmates chugged at parties. But 3.2% isn't strong enough for what he needs now. The clerk eyes him again, and Nath prepares himself.
"Go home, sonny. You're too young for this stuff."
Instead, the clerk says,
"Your sister that girl who died?"
Nath's throat goes raw, like a wound. He nods, focusing on the shelf behind the counter, where cigarettes rise in neat red and white stacks. Then the clerk takes down a second bottle of whiskey and puts it in a bag with the first. He slides the bag toward Nath, along with the $10 bill Nath has set on the counter.
"Good luck to you," he says,
and turns away. The quietest spot Nath knows is out on the edge of town, near the county line. He parks by the side of the road and pulls out one of the bottles. One gulp of whiskey, then another, burns its way down, and he pictures it torching away everything raw and red and painful inside him. It's almost one, and by the time the first bottle is gone, only one car has passed by. A dark green Studebaker with an old lady at the wheel. The whiskey isn't working the way he'd hoped. He'd thought it would wipe his mind clean, like a sponge on a blackboard. But instead, the world sharpens with each swallow, dizzying him with its details. The spatter of mud on the driver's side mirror. The last digit of the odometer, frozen between 5 and 6. The stitching in the car seat, just beginning to fray. A stray leaf caught between windshield and wiper rattles in the breeze. As he works through the second bottle, he thinks, suddenly, of his father's face as he'd walked out the door. The way he hadn't even glanced at them, as if he were focused on something far off on the horizon or deep, deep in the past. Something neither he nor Hannah could see. Something they couldn't touch even if they'd wanted to. The air inside the car grows thick, filling his lungs like cotton. Nath cranks the window down. Then, as the cool breeze rushes in, he pitches over the side and vomits both bottles of whiskey onto the curb. In his own car, James, too, mulls over that moment on the stairs. After he'd pulled out of the driveway, he had driven without thinking, jamming his foot onto the gas pedal, heading wherever he can slam his foot to the floor. This is how he finds himself driving not back to Louisa's, but across town, right past campus, onto the highway, nudging the needle to 60, 65, 70. Only when a sign, Toledo, 15 miles, flashes wide and green overhead, does he realize how far he's gone. How appropriate, he thinks. Toledo. It strikes him that there is a beautiful symmetry to life. 10 years ago, Marilyn had fled here, leaving everything behind. Now it is his turn. He takes a deep breath and presses the pedal more firmly. He has said it at last. What he had been most afraid to say, what she had most longed to hear. Pretend that you never met me, that none of this ever happened. He has undone the great mistake of her life. Except, and he can't deny this, no matter how he tries, Marilyn had not seemed grateful. She had flinched, as if he'd spat in her face. She had bitten her lips once, twice, as if swallowing a hard, painful seed. The car veers toward the shoulder, gravel shuddering under its wheels. She left first, James reminds himself, nudging the car to the center of the road again. This is what she's wanted all along. Yet even as he thinks this, he knows it is untrue. The yellow line wavers and weaves. To James, years of unabashed stares prickling his spine as if he were an animal in the zoo, years of mutters in the street, chink, gook, go home, stinging his ears. Different has always been a brand on his forehead, blazoned there between the eyes. It has tinted his entire life, this word. It has left its smudgy fingerprints on everything. But different had been different for Marilyn. Marilyn, young and unafraid in a classroom of men, draining the urine from her flasks, plugging her ears by filling her head with dreams. A white blouse in a sea of navy blue blazers. How she had longed for different. In her life, in herself. It is as if someone has lifted his world and turned it sideways and set it down again. Marilyn, packing those dreams away in lavender for their daughter. Disappointment layered beneath her smile. Triply sequestered by house and dead-end street and tiny college town, her hands soft and uncalloused, but idle. The intricate gears of her mind ticking silently at no one, thoughts pinging the closed windows like a trapped bee. And now, alone in their daughter's room, surrounded by the relics of their daughter's life, no lavender, only dust in the air. It has been so long since he thought of his wife as a creature of want. Later, and for the rest of his life, James will struggle to piece words to this feeling. And he will never quite manage to say, even just to himself, what he really means. At this moment, he can think only one thing. How was it possible, he wonders, to have been so wrong? Back in Middlewood, Nath does not know how long he lies there, sprawled across the front seat. All he knows is this. Someone opens the car door. Someone calls his name. Then a hand grips his shoulder, warm and gentle and strong, and it doesn't let go. To Nath, fighting through a deep and groggy stupor, the voice sounds like his father's, though his father has never spoken his name so softly, or touched him with such tenderness. In the moment before he opens his eyes, it is his father. And even when the world comes into focus to reveal hazy sunshine, a police cruiser, Officer Fisk crouching beside him in the open car door, It is still true. It is Officer Fisk who peels the empty whiskey bottle from his fingers and helps him lift his head. But in his heart, it is his father who says, with such kindness that Nath begins to cry,
"Son, it's time to go home."
11. In April, home was the last place Nath wanted to be. All month, weeks before his visit to campus, he stacked books and clothes in a growing pile. Every evening before bed, he slipped the letter from beneath his pillow and reread it, savoring the details. A junior from Albany, Andrew Biner, an astrophysics major, would escort him around campus, engage him in intellectual and practical discussions over meals in the dining hall, and host him for the long weekend. Friday to Monday, he thought, looking at his plane tickets, 96 hours. By the time he took his suitcase down, after Lydia's birthday dinner, he'd already sorted the things he'd take with him from those he'd leave behind. Even with her door closed, Lydia could hear it. The click, click of the suitcase latches opening. Then a thud as the lid hit the floor. Their family never traveled. Once, when Hannah was still a baby, they'd visited Gettysburg and Philadelphia. Their father had plotted out the whole trip in the road atlas, a chain of places so steeped in Americana that it oozed out everywhere, in the names of the gas stations, Valley Forge Diesel, and in the diner specials when they stopped for lunch, Gettystown Shrimp, William Penn's Pork Tenderloin. Then, at every restaurant, the waitresses had stared at her father, then at her mother, then at her and Nath and Hannah. She knew, even as a child, that they'd never come back. Since then, their father had taught summer classes every year, as if, she rightly suspected, to avoid raising the question of family vacations. In Nath's room, a drawer shut with a bang. Lydia leaned back on her bed and propped her heels on the postcard of Einstein. In her mouth, the sick, sweet taste of frosting still lingered. In her stomach, the birthday cake roiled. At the end of summer, she thought. Nath would pack not just the one suitcase, but a trunk and a stack of boxes. All his books and all his clothes. Everything he owned. The telescope would disappear from the corner. The stacks of aeronautics magazines would vanish from the closet. A band of dust would border the bare shelves. Clean wood at the back where the books had once stood. Every drawer, when she opened it, would be empty. Even the sheets on his bed would be gone. Nath pushed the door open.
"Which one's better?"
He held up two shirts, a hanger in each hand, so they flanked his face like curtains. On his left, a plain blue, his best dress shirt, the one he had worn to his junior award ceremony last spring. On the right, a paisley she'd never seen before, a price tag still dangling from the cuff. "Where'd you get that?"
"Bought it," Nath said with a grin.
All his life, whenever he needed new clothes, their mother dragged him to Decker's department store, and he agreed to anything she picked out in order to go home faster. Last week, counting over his 96 hours, he had driven himself to the mall for the first time and bought this shirt, plucking the bright pattern from the rack. It had felt like buying a new skin. And now his sister sensed this, too. "A little fancy for going to class." Lydia did not write herself. "Or is that how they expect you to dress at Harvard?" Nath lowered the hangers.
"There's a mixer for visiting students. And my host student wrote me, he and his roommates are throwing a party that weekend, to celebrate the end of term."
He held the patterned shirt against him, tucking collar beneath chin.
"Maybe I'd better try it on."
He disappeared into the bathroom, and Lydia heard the scrape of hanger on shower rod. A mixer. Music, dancing, beer, flirting. Phone numbers and addresses scribbled on scraps of paper. Write me. Call me. We'll get together. Slowly, her feet slid down to rest on her pillow. A mixer. Where new students got whirled together and blended up and turned into something new. Nath reappeared in the doorway, fastening the top button of the paisley shirt.
What do you think?
Lydia bit her lip. The blue pattern against the white suited him. It made him look thinner, taller, tanner. Though the buttons were plastic, they gleamed like pearl. Already, Nath looked like a different person, someone she'd known once a long time ago. Already, she missed him. The other one's better, she said. You're going to college, not Studio 54.
But she knew Nath had already made up his mind.
Late that night, just before midnight, she tiptoed into Nath's room. She had wanted to tell him all evening about their father and Louisa, about what she'd seen in the car that afternoon, what she knew was going on. Nath had been too preoccupied, and pinning down his attention had been like catching smoke in her hands. This was her last chance. He would be leaving in the morning. In the dim room, only the small desk lamp was on, and Nath was in his old striped pajamas, kneeling at the window sill. For a moment, Lydia thought he was praying, and embarrassed at catching him in such a private moment, like seeing him naked, she began to close the door. Then, at the sound of her footsteps, Nath turned. His smile as incandescent as the moon just beginning to swell over the horizon. She realized she'd been wrong. The window was open. He had not been praying, but dreaming, which, she would realize later, came to almost the same thing. Nath, she began. The rush of things she wanted to say churned in her head. I need... Such a large thing to break into tiny granules of words. Nath didn't seem to notice. Look at that, he whispered, with such awe that Lydia sank to her knees beside him and peered out. Above them, the sky rolled out a deep black, like a pool of ink, littered with stars. They were nothing like the stars in her science books, blurred and globby as drops of spit. They were razor sharp, each one precise as a period, punctuating the sky with light. Tipping her head back, she could not see the houses or the lake or the lamps on the street. All she could see was the sky, so huge and dark it could crush her. It was like being on another planet. No, like floating in space, alone. She searched for the constellations she had seen on Nath's posters. Orion, Cassiopeia, the Big Dipper. The diagrams seemed childish now, with their straight lines and primary colors and stick figure shapes. Here the stars dazzled her eyes like sequins. This is what infinity looks like, she thought. Their clarity overwhelmed her, like pinpricks at her heart. Isn't that amazing? Nath's voice said softly, out of the darkness. Already he sounded light years away. Yeah, Lydia heard her own voice say, barely a whisper. Amazing. The next morning, as Nath tucked his toothbrush into its case, Lydia hovered in the doorway. In 10 minutes, their father would drive him to the airport in Cleveland, where TWA would carry him to New York, then Boston. It was 4:30 a.m. Promise you'll call and tell me how things are going?
Sure, Nath said. He stretched the elastic straps over his folded clothes in a neat X and clapped the suitcase shut.
You promise?
I promise. Nath shut the latches with one finger, then hoisted the suitcase by the handle. Dad's waiting. I'll see you Monday.
And just like that, he was gone.
Much later, when Lydia came downstairs for breakfast, she could almost pretend that nothing had changed. Her homework lay beside her breakfast bowl with four little ticks in the margin. Across the table, Hannah picked pebbles of cereal from her bowl. Their mother sipped oolong and leafed through the newspaper. Only one thing was different. Nath's place was empty, as if he had never been there.
There you are, Marilyn said. Better hurry and fix this, sweetheart, or you won't have time to eat before the bus.
Lydia, who felt as if she were floating, made her way to the table. Marilyn, meanwhile, skimmed the paper. Carter's approval rating, 65%. Mondale settling into role of senior advisor. Asbestos banned. Another shooting in New York. Before her eyes came to rest on a small human interest story in the corner of the page. Los Angeles doctor revives man in coma for 6 years.
Amazing, she thought.
She smiled up at her daughter, who stood clinging to the back of her chair as if without it she might drift away. Nath did not call that night, when Lydia shrank and shriveled beneath her parents' undeflected attention.
I got a course catalog from the college. Do you want to take statistics this summer?
Anyone ask you to prom yet? Well, I'm sure someone will soon.
He did not call Saturday, when Lydia cried herself to sleep. Or on Sunday, when she awoke with eyes still scalding.
So this is what it will be like, she thought to herself. As if I never had a brother at all.
With Nath gone, Hannah followed Lydia like a puppy, scampering to her door each morning before Lydia's clock radio had even gone off, her voice breathless, just short of a pant.
Guess what? Lydia, guess what?
It was never guessable and never important. It was raining. There were pancakes for breakfast. There was a blue jay in the spruce tree. Each day, all day, she trailed Lydia, suggesting things they could do.
We could play Life. We could watch the Friday night movie. We could make Jiffy Pop.
All her life, Hannah had hovered at a distance from her brother and sister, and Lydia and Nath had tacitly tolerated their small, awkward moon. Now Lydia noticed a thousand little things about her sister. The way she twitched her nose once, twice, fast as a rabbit when she was talking. The habit she had of standing on her toes, as if she had on invisible high heels. And then, Sunday afternoon, as Hannah climbed into the wedges Lydia had kicked off, she delivered her latest idea.
We could go play by the lake. Lydia, let's go play by the lake.
And Lydia noticed something else, shiny and silver beneath Hannah's shirt.
What's that?
Hannah tried to turn away, but Lydia jerked her collar down to reveal what she had already half-glimpsed. A lithe silver chain, a slender silver heart. Her locket. She hooked it with one finger, and Hannah teetered, staggering out of Lydia's shoes with a thump.
What are you doing with that?
Hannah glanced at the doorway, as if the correct answer might be painted on the wall. 6 days ago, she had found the little velvet box beneath Lydia's bed.
I didn't think you wanted it, she whispered.
Lydia wasn't listening.
Every time you look at this, she heard her father say, just remember what really matters. Being sociable, being popular, blending in. You don't feel like smiling? Then what? Force yourself to smile. Don't criticize, condemn, or complain.
Hannah, so pleased in that little silver snare, looked like her younger self, timid, gawky shoulders just beginning to stoop under the weight of something that seemed so thin and silver and light. With a loud crack, her hand struck Hannah's cheek, knocking her back, snapping her head to the side. Then she looped her whole hand through the chain and twisted hard, jerking her forward like a dog on a choke collar.
"I'm sorry,"
Hannah began, but nothing emerged except a soft gasp. Lydia twisted harder. Then the necklace snapped, and both sisters found they could breathe again.
"You don't want that," Lydia said, the gentleness in her voice surprising Hannah, surprising Lydia herself. "Listen to me. You think you do? You don't."
She bunched the necklace in her fist.
"Promise me you'll never put this on again. Ever."
Hannah shook her head, eyes wide. Lydia touched her sister's throat, her thumb smoothing the tiny thread of blood where the chain had sliced into the skin.
"Don't ever smile if you don't want to," she said.
And Hannah, half blinded by the spotlight of Lydia's whole attention, nodded.
"Remember that."
Hannah kept her word. Later that night, and for years to come, she would look back on this moment, each time touching her throat, where the red mark of the chain had long since faded away. Lydia had looked more anxious than angry, the necklace dangling from her fingers like a dead snake. She had sounded almost sad, as if she had done something wrong, not Hannah. The necklace was, in fact, the last thing Hannah would ever steal. But this moment, this last talk with her sister, would puzzle her for a long time. That evening, in the safety of her room, Lydia pulled out the piece of loose leaf on which Nath had scrawled his host student's number. After dinner, when her father retreated to his study and her mother settled into the living room, she unfolded it and picked up the telephone on the landing. The phone rang 6 times before someone answered, and in the background, she could hear the raucous sounds of a party just getting underway.
"Who?"
the voice on the other end said, twice. And at last, Lydia gave up whispering and snapped, "Nathan Lee! The visiting student, Nathan Lee!" Minutes ticked by, each ratcheting up the long-distance charge, though by the time the bill came, James would be too devastated to notice. Downstairs, Marilyn clicked the television dial around and around. Rhoda, $6 million man, Quincy, Rhoda again. Then, finally, Nath came on the line.
"Nath," Lydia said, "it's me."
To her surprise, tears welled in her eyes just at the sound of his voice, though his voice was deeper and blunter than usual, as if he had a cold. In fact, Nath was 3/4 through the first beer of his life, and the room was beginning to take on a warmish glow. Now his sister's voice, flattened by long distance, sliced through that glow like a blunt knife.
"What's the matter?"
"You didn't call."
"What?"
"You promised you'd call."
Lydia wiped her eyes with the back of one wrist.
"That's why you're calling?"
"No, listen. Nath, I need to tell you something."
Lydia paused, puzzling over how to explain. In the background, a burst of laughter swelled like a wave crashing ashore. Nath sighed.
"What happened? Did Mom nag you about your homework?"
He tipped the bottle to his lips and found the beer had gone warm, and the stale liquid shriveled his tongue.
"Wait, let me guess. Mom bought you a special present, but it was just a book. Dad bought you a new dress, no, a diamond necklace, and he expects you to wear it. Last night at dinner you had to talk and talk and talk, and all their attention was on you. Am I getting warmer?"
Stunned, Lydia fell silent. All their